Welcome to Hometown Happenings, a podcast of unique and interesting stories happening in towns and cities across South Carolina. I'm your host, Todd Glover. Well, welcome to an exciting podcast that we have for you today. I'm joined by Scott Price, Executive Director of the South Carolina School Boards Association, and also Chief Harry Dolan, retired police chief with over 32 years of police experience, and he's with the Dolan Consulting Group. So, gentlemen, welcome to today's podcast.
Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
We've got a important story to tell, and we're going to lead up to some exciting joint training headline by Chief Harry Dolan. So we're going to tell a little bit of a story about how we got to this point and then get into some discussions with Chief Dolan. So, Scott, I know you and I have been talking for the better part of a year. Our association has been on a civility path, but your association really was on that path prior to the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Todd. So it goes back to, I guess, heading into the 2020 elections and just sort of looking at the political environment across the country. And, you know, we felt at the School Boards Association that it presented a great opportunity for us to start working with our boards on, and it was really, really civility. And of course, for years, we've had ethical principles that every school board signs at the beginning of the year. And it includes things like, you know, making sure that you're working well together as a board. And so it's got you know, showing respect for others at the board table and, you know, hearing all opinions. So it's got some of the elements that you see in the pillars of civility that are already in there, and they sign it every year and they put it on their wall in their boardroom. And so we felt that this was again 2019-2020, we felt it was a good opportunity to roll out something focusing on civility. And we, at our annual conference, we did a day-long training and people packed the house. They were very excited about it. They were really, really hungry for this type of training. We focused on it at the 2020 annual convention in February, and then we all know what happened in March. And we pivoted and focused on working with boards and helping them get through the pandemic. So the civility went by the wayside. Civility training went by the wayside. And post-pandemic, flash forward a few years, and I'm really literally trying to think of a way to re-engage. And Todd calls me with the Municipal Association, gives me a call and says, hey, let's go to lunch and talk about a civility project that we've been working on with the Municipal Association. And so Todd and I got together, and we haven't looked back. I was very excited about it. I took the prospect of a joint partnership with the Municipal Association. I took that prospect to my board of directors. They were extremely excited about it. And we rolled that out, I guess, in February this past year. Well, actually the current year, February, we rolled it out at a joint press conference. And we were able to use some of the materials that the Municipal Association had developed to present to our membership, some of the same trainers. I think Matt Lehrman, somebody who came down and worked with us. So it's been something that I'm excited about, my board excited about, and our membership's excited about it. And the joint training that we have coming up in October, I look forward to having another packed house there for city and school board members.
Absolutely. And it was really, I guess the word is serendipitous. Our board met in 2021 to develop a strategic plan, and civility was one of our top three initiatives. And we had economic development, workforce, and civility, and we went straight to economic development and workforce because how do you put your arms around civility? How do you, you know, how do you address that? We know it's an issue, but how do you address it? And so our staff has done a fantastic job in putting our, what we call our civility initiative together. And it was just serendipitous, you know, that the School Boards Association was on that parallel track with us. And now that we've had the opportunity to join forces, you know, a public meeting is a public meeting. The requirements for public meetings for school boards and municipalities are the same. Our FOIA requirements are the same. And we're seeing some of the same pressures at our public meetings at school boards as we're seeing in municipalities. And so I really think it was just fortuitous for both of us. And as a part of that discussion, I mentioned, I know that our risk management services, our insurance department that we have, that we provide for insurance services that we provide for our cities and towns throughout South Carolina, have been using Chief Dolan for quite some time with his verbal judo. And Chief, we're going to talk about that. And I don't know if that's a term that you coined.
No, I just coined the phrase surviving verbal conflict. Old George Thompson, Dr. Thompson, the late Dr. Thompson, is deceased. He was a judo expert and also a expert in communication skills. And he developed a curriculum around verbal judo, the gentle way of persuasion, primarily for law enforcement, but certainly for other professions as well. Someone I knew quite well and had a lot of respect for, but I certainly wouldn't delve into his work. I would never have his expertise. God rest his soul. Wonderful, wonderful man.
Well, we know that our insurance services had utilized you for a long time, mainly training our police officers for our insureds. We know the troubles that our country has seen over the past 5 to 6 years with police shootings, and your training has been very pivotal in helping our police departments in our cities and towns in South Carolina utilize other skills rather than weapons to de-escalate situations. And it really seemed like a natural. And so if you could talk about maybe how you've really tried to modify that training from police officers to public officials.
Oh, I think that's one of the best questions to get started with. I think it's a life skill. I think you have to first start there. It's like when I'm addressing a law enforcement officer, or next in 2 weeks, I'll be teaching church officials, folks that are in congregations and holding services and dealing with the conflict of today, because I couldn't applaud you more with bringing the groups together of the municipal associations, school board associations, bringing it together with the whole theme of civility. The reason I applaud that, and I don't know who was the first to say, let's use the concept of civility, because I think there's an absence of it. I say that just not as a police professional, but somebody who travels a lot, travel the country quite a lot, particularly post-COVID now. We're doing a lot of training on site again, and you're just seeing people annoyed in planes. You're seeing people at the gate agent. At so many school board meetings that I've been at, that we've had extensive plans to handle some of the unhappy citizens, and it's city council meetings. When you have somebody come into the clerk's office, or someone's coming in to pay a parking ticket. So for the two associations to get together and say, let's get ahead of this, you're doing that already. And for law enforcement, not only have I done recorded training, but live training for your group and others, South Carolina, North Carolina really is ahead of the curve, particularly in South Carolina. And now that you're taking it to other groups, like I do with hospitals, emergency departments, it all is a life skill. So to really address your issue about how does this evolve from law enforcement, we really have to go back further. It's really a life skill. And where I get a real kick out of what I do, and I know you gentlemen will get a kick out of this, because you remember from high school or college, we never paid attention to philosophy. I never did. It just in one ear, out the other. Makes no sense. These folks, these ancients and these Greeks and all these folks, just never really made sense to me. Now it does. I didn't realize it. When you look at the word philosophy, if you define it as you get older, and I always tell young people this, don't worry, you'll start figuring out later. Philosophy is defined from the Latin and Greek as the love of wisdom. And I think that's what happens to us, is that we just get smarter at this. At what? At, you know, it's like you have three children. You say, man, I wish I knew what I knew in the third one with the first one. That's just life's experience coming out. So the first thing I do with my audience is, whether it be in, again, in the hospital or city hall or with a law enforcement group, is to talk about this as a life skill. You know, if, and they say, well, you've had some challenges. And I always think that's nice. Yeah, if I can talk somebody very angry out of getting out of a car because their license is revoked without having to use force, I think that's nice. Thank you for telling me that. But I also raise teenagers, and getting them to understand what I'm trying to do was just as tough, and sometimes even tougher. I always tell audiences this as well. If you learn some things today, and we're going to go back to philosophy, don't worry, I always tell them, it's not a philosophy test. We're going to get back to the basics of human communication, things that have worked for 2,400 years. We don't need a new lesson plan. We don't need a whole new research project. I have a PhD who works with me and helps us with all of our research. But what we cover, the basic tenets of our course, are 2,400 years old, because it's philosophical, it's a rhetorical perspective. Well, what I tell them is, I'd be so disappointed if you learned some skills today and you use them at work and you say, wow, what an impact. And then you get home and get pissed off at everybody in your family or your neighbor. I said, well, that didn't help. And they know, they say that to me sometimes. They said, yeah, I think I got rope-a-doped. And I'll explain some of these phrases to you. Because what we do in the training is we use the basics of the rhetorical perspective from Aristotle. And then, like they talk about now in the Heath Brothers book, Made to Stick, about learning concepts, are you making them stick with people? You know, what are the phrases? Like, no one did it better, in my opinion, than the champ, Muhammad Ali, the greatest boxer in the history of the world. Well, how do you know that? He told us. He said, I'm the greatest boxer, if you know him, in the history of the world. Anybody who would get in the ring with me is a fool. And he'd say that. You either loved him like I did, or he drove you crazy. And George Foreman, I got a kick out of this. George Foreman said, yeah, he beat me just like he said he was. But he knew why. George Foreman figured it out later. When the champ said, I'm going to introduce the rope-a-dope on you. I'm going to get you in the corner. I'm going to beat you so bad when your mom picks you up from the hospital and they tell you that your George is in room 6, she's going to walk in, say, that's not my George. I'm going to beat you so bad, George, your mom's not going to be able to pick you up at the hospital. Well, things like that. He said something very wise, because I think he was a philosopher. I think if you study Muhammad Ali's life, it's very, very incredible life, very, very intelligent person. And what he said philosophically was, and this goes through philosophy, through faith-based traditions and such, is that you really want to get somebody. You want to be able to make them malleable, be able to work them. Oh, don't put fear in them. See, fear doesn't work. Fear raises your cortisol, gets you real small. You start getting small when your cortisol gets up. Doesn't mean you can't hurt somebody, but it's really not, you're prone to, because you're seeing it inside yourself. You'll see somebody in a school, the teachers that are listening know this, or school board people, the person that's cowering in the seat, that's cortisol, stress, anxiety. But now what the champ said was, you really want to get them. No. Don't put fear in them. You got to make them angry, see? And once you make them angry, then they're yours. Well, that's at home, isn't it? Let's start first at home. The champ's right. Well, you love Bob more than me. Oh, you think I love one kid more than the other? What is wrong with you? Got your mom. Got your dad. But, oh, let me tell you something right now. I brought you in the world. I will take you out. All right? Oh, well, you live here by my rules. Those are not effective communication strategies, and never have. But you've been rope-a-dope. The champ's right. There's somebody that just got you mad. And when you're mad, as you mentioned, George Thompson was always famous for saying, words that rise readily to the lips are disastrous. You're about to give the greatest speech you'll ever live to regret. Let's go to a school board meeting. You're going to sit down now. Your time is up. They're going, gotcha. I don't have to put up with this, right? I don't get paid for this, and we don't have time for this. Well, actually, you don't make a lot, but there is a stipend. And if you're working for a city, you do get paid and you do have time, because there's 3 hours to the rest of the shift, to the rest of the meeting. But those are warning signs that someone rope-a-doped you. And that's what some of the essence of the training is, that you have to pick up on this yourself. And there's something at home I tell people, and I want everyone to, if you have to leave the podcast and you're not able to listen to the rest, but I want you to remember two things for me. And I want to start with these, because this is important. Would you remember this for me? when you're getting pissed off at someone, or they're rope-a-doping you, or you're finding yourself getting hot under the collar, and they're making a point, whether it's at home to the people you love the most or at work, you have to remember something. They think they're right. Okay? And that's where people go wrong. Now, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Now, anybody who says that, well, no, don't do it. You got to listen to what I'm saying. And what the absence of, not only civility today, is empathy. And people think empathy, well, that means your sympathy. Well, you can derive sympathy. But empathy, if we really look at the Latin and Greek, it's really to see the world through the eyes of someone else. In policing, it's a survival skill. See, if you're calm enough to listen to what someone's saying, they'll fill your pockets with intelligence. But if you're too busy cutting them off because they're stupid, you didn't let them finish. And if it's a life and death situation, they're telling you something you're not paying attention to. Well, if you're at home and you're getting upset because your daughter is yelling and arguing with her 15-year-old brother, and she's 17, and let's go back to the middle of COVID, and the and you hear your daughter upstairs, let's say, get away from my room. Go, don't go near my stuff because you smell and you stink. Stay away from my room. Oh, you get home from work and you're not in the best spirits. You're already getting rope-a-doped. And you say, come down here, young lady. I don't care. He stinks. And so does the other one. And I'm tired of this Zoom shit. And boom, boom. And here it comes. Just, oh, and you're going, bring it down right now. And then all of a sudden, you get into it and you don't do well. And your words are rising readily to your lips. What I learned a long time ago, and I want everyone, if you can't make the training, take a note here. Follow Florence Dolan's 24-hour rule. My mother raised 7 of us. We always thought she was an avoider, and she always said, we'll talk in the morning. Ma, I'll talk now. Your son Peter, my former brother, bump, Harry, we'll talk in the morning. And the next day, she was right. And I became a police professional, and I realized my mother was an emergency manager. Yeah, critical incident manager. Information delivered in the midst of a crisis is often accurate. You're reacting to words, and you don't have the intel. And in that case I just mentioned, my daughter thought she was right, right? Or my son, and they're upset. Well, we're going to talk in the morning. I don't care, Dad. We can talk now. We'll talk in the morning. Right? Okay, I don't care. Get ready for dinner. We're going to talk in the morning. Well, I'm not in any condition to talk, so I'm going to deflect that verbal abuse, and we're going to, before I go into work in the morning, we're going to talk. Now, Sarah or Bob, whatever the case, what? Oh, I know. You followed your 24-hour rule. Now you want to talk. Now, listen. Tell me what's going on. What, your brother, he stinks. What's going on? Hey, Dad, we don't even know if we're going to walk. Are we going to have the play this year because of this COVID stuff? And I don't even know. Mom tried to call the school. They're not telling us. Are we having a prom? I don't know anything that's going on. All right. So let me make sure I'm clear here. What you're saying is you're upset about you don't know if you're going to have that play. Dad, I've tried for 3 years to finally make that part I got, and we don't even know if we're going to have the play. Okay. So let me make sure I'm clear here. So what you're saying is you're upset because you don't know if they're going to have the play or if you're having a prom or anything else. No. So you're really not mad at your brother and you're not annoyed. Dad, it's just that they, all right, I hear that. And we're going to have to work together. We haven't had a good pandemic in 100 years. All right, so now we're going to get to work together. Mom had to go part-time. We're going to get through this. She needs your help with your brother and his homework. I get this Zoom and things driving you crazy. Got to work with me here. All right.
Well, let's hear this.
Everybody hears this. Dad, I'm sorry. I know. Because what did you do? You didn't react to words. You responded to the meaning. She's upset at everything. Parents know they're not mad at you. They feel safest at home where they could never talk like this at school. You have to see the world through someone's eyes. It doesn't mean you become oversympathetic or you don't deal with issues. To a police officer, it could be life and death if you're listening to someone. They're telling you things unwittingly. Now, when you delay that a bit, and if everyone can remember this, to see the world through other people's eyes and deflect that verbal abuse. And that second point, and I know I'm going on, I want to finish the second point for my note takers that are going to head out. Here's the second point you have to stay on. I saw the world through the eyes of the people I love most at home. You should do that at a school board meeting with a parent that's passionate. All right, we don't need to shut them down. If they think they're right, we're not going to convince them of anything right now. Let's hear it out. Then what I did with the role play of my daughter, I said, let me make sure I'm clear here. The first most powerful word in the English language, in my opinion, is empathy, to be able to see the world through someone else's eyes. And the second was paraphrase. See, I took the time to listen. Now that I got intelligence, from my daughter. What's really bothering her? I paraphrase it back. So what you're saying is, what you're upset about is that you don't know if you're going to have that play. Wouldn't you? Even if she's upset, she's starting to come down. I would like everybody to start thinking of those two concepts in every part of their life, and it can make an impact. At a school board meeting when someone's raging a bit. All right. Now, I heard that. Let me make sure I'm clear here. So what you're saying is you're upset about your daughter or son's assignment and that the teacher, I just want, that's what I'm saying. All right. And already you're starting to bring people down because you took the time. But that phrase of paraphrasing, I think, can save a relationship at home. And they, why? Because you're taking time to do that. So sorry to go on a roll like that, but I always know in podcasts, people are driving or they may not have a time because we're going to speak about a lot of wisdom. I can tell that, Scott and Todd. We're all very wise people here. Aristotle would be proud of us. But for everyone listening, why the training's important, because your opening question, Todd, was so important, is more about home. Because if you're doing good work at home and you're learning how to communicate, you're going to be awesome at work. We all know that. That we don't want to parcel it. We want it to help improve your quality of life.
Well that, Chief, let me go ahead, Todd.
And that's one of the, I was going to speak about a quote from another great boxing philosopher, Mike Tyson, who one of my favorite quotes is, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And a lot of times I think our city councils and our school boards, they plan the meetings and the first public comment that really starts out of the gate on fire, somebody really, and then the whole meeting, the plan goes away. Your plan for everything that you've had, you know, to do. And so I think it's so important that, you know, we don't, and a lot of times we don't have the ability to say, time out, let's talk tomorrow. How do we equip our leaders to, in that emotional moment, that very public moment, to when they get figuratively punched in the mouth, how do we keep them on their plan and keep control of the meeting?
And Todd, can I play on that too? Because that was going to be my point is, yes, you're right, Chief. It's you know, public input and school boards want to hear from they want to have public input. Trust me. So the ability to deal with the irate parent is, I think, is very important. But I'd like to go one step further, and you know, your own school board member can quote unquote punch you in the mouth during the middle of a board meeting. And I think that's something that is important too, is how leadership and how school board members can learn to de-escalate their own seatmate on the dais at a school board meeting in order to make sure that you can get through the agenda and get the business done on the board. And one of the things that's so intriguing to me about this and exciting to me about this is, you know, at any given school board meeting in this country, in South Carolina, in this country, you're going to have parents there, you're going to have kids there, you're going to have grandkids there, you're going to have the clergy there, business, military. So there's so much of a need for boards to be able to exhibit how good civil meetings should be conducted. And that's kind of the way I'm coming at this. And because there's nobody else out there, I think, has more of a role to provide to model that than school boards.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, because that's really where we see a lot of the incivility, but it's so personal. It's like on a call for service with police, domestic disturbances, or for social work, a custody battle. I can't imagine anything more sensitive than our children that we love so much. We got to think of that empathy-wise. People coming in. And the first thing, particularly as a school board member, a municipal member on the city council, everyone, your leaders. You got to right away, I'm a leader. No, I ran for council. You're a leader. You're a leader on a school board. You're representing the community. So leaders all realize something. He or she, the Chinese proverb is very accurate. Since Todd's quoting another champ, I'm going to quote too, because this is how we learn too. This is part of philosophy, is that he or she who raises their voice first loses the argument. I just want to make sure everybody's clear on that, because I've been on police calls and that's what's happened. I've seen officers stir up, and I spell it differently, stir up more things by getting pissed off, or a school board member. It's just, you might as well close it. Serious business. And I know we can't always do this, but everyone should be aware of this, because I'm a fan of this. If it's not going to happen, it might be time to exit stage left because it's not working. But what the point is, we all have to remember we're leaders. And you can't take it personal. Well, they said that I don't care about children. I know, because why do people verbally abuse you? Well, why? Because it works. So if I can get you off your game, remember, I can get you angry, I say you don't care about kids. Well, and I always know when someone's upset. Let me tell you something. I went on the school board. You know how much money I make? This, I'm losing money because I'm doing this. And here it comes. I don't want to bounce your resume. Right. But why am I giving someone my resume? Because I'm pissed. OK, you might as well park it. And see, since nobody is trained in what I call verbal contact and cover. Right. Just a, what? Tom, let me address this. Sarah, no one steps in. They just sit there going, OK, this is getting ugly. Elliot's about to really say some stupid stuff. And they just sit there because they're human beings. We cover this in the training, too. That's right. Called groupthink, bystander effect, and diffusion responsibility. Leaders step up and they take charge. But here's the other point that I would give you, because I know that people say this, but I don't know how well we do it, because I know I'm pushing this hard in policing all over the country. What are the rules of engagement? What do you mean? What are the rules of engagement? I don't get it. We're having a school board meeting, or I'm going to stop a car. No, what are the rules of engagement? If they don't do this or they do this, what are we doing? And I'll give you a very quick example. We had a school board meeting that was going to go south. We knew it. We had hundreds of people in Raleigh that were going to protest. All right, what are we going to do? We had a rules of engagement meeting. If the people do A, B, and C, and we'll give this into training, the rhetorical perspective of three steps, we're going to do E, F, and G. We all had an agreement. And I arrested, I don't know, 150 people. And we did it right. We all read from the same sheet of music. Another leadership phrase for every board, and I know there's politics in all the boards, it's our life, it's our form of government, right? What do we know? There has to be unity and command to some extent. I know these are leadership phrases from military, but I think they just hit the money right on. Are we as a council? Yes, we have different viewpoints. But we are going to be civil, right? We all are going to agree that we can't let it get out of hand, right? Okay, now we're unified. Now, what are the rules of engagement? We give someone 3 minutes, right? What are we going to do after 3 minutes, right? Well, we're going to tell the deputy. Well, then we're all going to get pissed off at the deputy because the deputy's doing it. No. What is the rules of engagement? Does the deputy do A, B, or C, or does the officer do? It's that serious, Todd. And that's, I know that's what you're hitting is, are we having those meetings? Are we saying if it gets to this level, and I use videos from board meetings that really go south, Todd, as you know, and everyone's just sitting there rather than exiting stage left. But what's the game plan when it happens? It's the rules of engagement. And everyone sees these meetings that have happened around the country. And that's why you gentlemen are working so hard on this project. We see the meetings go, sideways. Oh, the officer made an arrest, dragged the dad right out of the room. You know, I know the officer should have, and the board, we thought that's what you wanted. Oh, you didn't communicate. Oh, we don't want anybody arrested. We just wanted them away from the microphone. Well, we got to get some rules here on how you want us to do that. We could turn the microphone off rather than drag them away. Well, that would be bad. Well, could we meet with that first, right? So if we do make an arrest, if we do have to end someone's time, how do we do it? I don't think, Todd, they think this through. It kind of is ad hoc, or let's ad lib it. And cops are ad libbers, you know that. We're going to figure something out. That's what we do for a living. But it isn't, you know, it's lawful, but it looks awful at times. I mean, we know what we're doing, but I believe today the rules of engagement, and make sure all the boards that I know that you represent, folks, what are we doing? Let's be together. You have your opinion. I have mine. Let's predict. You know that phrase I love, I use it a lot in the training when we talk about the rhetorical perspective, is commander's intent. All commander's intent is, and I've not been in the military, but paramilitary. My son-in-law is a Marine, special ops kid. He loves his freight. Everyone does. Rules of engagement, right? And commander's intent. At the end of this altercation, at the end of this meeting, at the end of this project, what do we want to accomplish, right? What are the commander's intent, right? That's what we're really not doing. So if you sit that down, get some rules of engagement done, really, if arrests happen or the meeting's adjourned, we already called it. We already said that when it meets this. And that last piece is this. when someone gets up, and I'm going to quote him because he was one of the best, Mayor John Logie, when I was the police chief in Grand Rapids, Michigan, he was an attorney and he was the mayor and he ran the city council meeting. Half the council liked him. The other half didn't like him. Half the people there liked him. I liked him a lot because he was such a strong leader. But what he did was, here's your 3 minutes. Here's what we're going to do. And then we're going to do that. I said, this guy is he, and what he, everybody knew the rules of engagement before they talked. And you are, oh, thank you. And you are Todd Glover. Todd, nice to have you here. And you live on Elm Street. That's very great. Todd, I'm going to give you 3 minutes. Okay. And I want you to state your point. We're going to be all ears. Okay. Todd, at the end of that, I'm going to give you a notice that the 3 minutes is up, but I'm not going to interrupt you. I'm going to let you finish. Might give you an extra minute there, but we're going to wrap it up by then. And then we'll see if the council has any questions. Is that okay? Because if it's not, what I always tell everybody, that's what the officer's here for. Yeah. We've asked the officer that we're just going to ask that you not go past the 3-4 minutes. Are we good here? Oh man. Every meeting, this is what he did. And I'm telling you, people are like, okay, we're at that 4 minute mark. He told everybody the rules of engagement. I don't think that happens enough. And doing it in the right way is the best way. He did it with the utmost of respect, and he didn't take things personal. And
so we had a situation here in South Carolina, one of our cities recently, as part of this campaign, our tagline is civility, respect, solutions. And we have a civility pledge that a lot of our municipalities are saying, Scott, I don't know if any of the school boards are doing.
We haven't done the civility pledge just yet.
So the civility pledge is, I pledge to build a stronger and more prosperous community by advocating for civil engagement, respecting others and their viewpoints, and finding solutions for the betterment of my city or town. You know, that's pretty powerful when the city council, the mayor, the staff, their residents, everybody's kind of setting that rules of engagement. You know, the city's going to run their meeting and they're going to have their 3 minutes of public input. But what I like about the civility pledge is everybody's kind of standing up and saying, okay, we're going to self-police ourselves. I'm going to say that I'm going to behave and you're going to behave. But we had recently a resident in a city who stood up and spoke for 3 minutes. And then when the mayor said, okay, your time is up, he held up, he said, I have powers of attorney from these five people back here to give me their 3 minutes. So I'm going to speak for 15 more minutes. And the mayor handled it really well. She's like, absolutely not. You're not going to do that. These are our rules. Each person has 3 minutes. They ultimately had to remove him with the officers. And of course it got videoed and put on YouTube and all that type of stuff. But you know, everybody seemed to say, well, look, you know, you knew the rules when you got up there. And so they explained them. And so I do give kudos to that mayor and that council for handling that correctly. But that's what I love about our pledge, is it also, beyond those rules, it kind of tells everybody in the room, okay, we're going to agree to police ourselves.
You know what it reminds me of, Todd? I coach my kids' teams, and I'm a former Division I basketball player. I don't know if you know it. I'm 6'8" tall, so I was a tall copper, but I love basketball. And so Paula would find me interesting as a coach, and so did my own son, that, you know, he thinks he's playing again. I'm the classic, you know, someone who played baseball. They get in their 30s, they go out and play baseball. They think they're 22 and they break their leg, and they get right back into their mode. What I really enjoyed in coaching in Little League and in basketball, the pledges that you just mentioned, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the kids. And there were times I could see I'm getting emotional, and you got to keep reminding yourself of that, because I didn't want to be the coach that had to be kicked out of the game, although probably close a couple of times. I didn't want that. And what's happening is, if particularly Scott, in your world, we're educators, right? So what are we educating? What are we role modeling here? Okay. Are we priming the kids for success? Well, my mom, and see, I would talk this way as a school board member. I want everyone to be heard, but I want everyone in our middle school, junior high schools, and elementary schools to watch how we do, so we can show them what right looks like when we have a conflict.
Exactly.
Why I'm taking exception right now is I have parents yelling, and I don't want the young people to think this is the way, or a school board member. We exactly. have to be civility. And that's why some of these baseball games have gotten out of control. We have helicopter parents. I get every bit of that. But we have to have rules of engagement on the baseball. We should never let it get to that point that the children don't want to go to Little League. And you know that's happened. Kids that don't want to go to school, they have to hear from the parents at home. I'll be darned if that school board, no, we got to do this a lot differently, because my son, Matthew, he's an attorney. He has four children. He's our attorney here. He has four children under eight. And Paul and I went over last night, and we were babysitting because it was a school teacher meeting. And they're crazy, all for it. I mean, they're just... But you have to pay attention to what you say. How do you talk to them, from the second grader to the kindergarten to the 3-year-old, and then the one that's just driving everybody crazy, just crawling around? But you have to role model. You have to show them what right looks, how you handle conflict between the two. And then they get this mixed message when they go to a school board meeting and someone says, no one's pushing me around and all this. And then we wonder why in the school the children may be standing up arguing with a teacher. And I know, gentlemen, I'm older than you and we're from different generations. I can never remember ever me or someone at my school. And I went to public schools in New York. I can't remember someone standing up telling a teacher to shut up. You can shut up. I wouldn't do it. Matter of fact, if I got stopped by the NYPD, I would say, take me to Sing Sing. Take me anywhere you want. Don't bring me home to the old man who was a sergeant on the NYPD or my grandfather, a lieutenant. Take me to your jail. Well, I would never do that. It's happening today. And you can't say that, you know, everyone at the school board has to know, and everybody at the different municipalities everywhere, everyone's watching these community channels now. And if people are screaming, pointing their finger, which is a nonverbal, and I know you guys want to cover that too, a nonverbal, sticking your finger out, that is the most obnoxious nonverbal you have. It's like sticking your finger in someone else's eye. And the other thing that goes with the finger, the pointed finger that really pisses people off, and I learned this in 1980, is to utter the phrase, calm down. You know, pointing at someone and say, calm down. Well, I tried that in 1980. I was a newlywed. I got a post-traumatic stress here. I said to Paula, hey, why don't you calm down and we'll do that. Whoa, that went sideways. I even told my father about that. What's going on? Well, what happened? He said, what? You told her calm down? Yeah. Well, no, that doesn't work. Neither does you want to go to jail. I never had that work either, guys, out there. Hey, you want to go to jail? Hey, you big mouth. I've never heard anybody, now that you've said that, officer, I have to redirect my behavior. I wouldn't want to be incarcerated. I've never heard that. What are you going to put me in jail for? You're going to tell me, and I said, well, it doesn't work, so I stopped doing it. And I would tell somebody at a board meeting, a city hall, or at a school board meeting, I wouldn't tell people, calm down, or I'm having a plea. I wouldn't do that. I would say, I hear what you're saying, but let's get back to the point. That's that kind of thing. I wouldn't do that. I lose that at home and at work.
Well, Chief, you mentioned rules of engagement, and I really like that, because I will tell you that school boards in South Carolina, almost to a board, have very specific processes for public engagement. What I like further that you said was the unity in command, making sure that everybody on that board understands what the process is and making sure that the public understands what that process is. And many boards will read out before the before they start public comment, they'll read out, here are the rules. And I think that's very important to make sure that people understand that, because you are going to have situations where somebody's just going to, the rules are going to go in one ear and out the other. And what I like what you're saying is there needs to be a plan for how you deal with that, or rules of engagements for how you deal with that, because it's going to happen. And again, I look at situations where, if you have that unity on that board, then I think you position yourselves a whole lot better to be able to deal with that member of the public, because people are passionate. They're talking about their kids, and you're exactly right. They feel like they are correct, and it's just, it's so the rules of engagement, I think, are very important.
Would you add to that, Scott, too, is that, you know, and I really do, I like the fact, and I do, it's unity. It's unity as leaders. It's not that we all agree. We're not. We've got to be apolitical, and sometimes, and where we're apolitical is in safety and running a meeting and role modeling for the entire community. We can have strong feelings, and we should, and passion. Let's show everyone else how we're going to do that. So deflecting the verbal abuse, listening to people, paraphrasing back, I want to make sure you had your 3 minutes. So what you're saying, we got this down. Your concern is A, B, and C. Don't just ignore people. I think that paraphrase, even if you don't agree with it, I just want to make sure that we're clear. Your major concern is A, B, and C. We collect Mr. Smith. Yeah, you got it. All right. Thank you, sir. Your time. So what we want to do that, but please tell them this too, if they can't come to the training, your nonverbal is 93% of your message. Righty? And what does that mean? It's for instance here, this is a podcast, so there's no video of me. But even though there's no video of me, and people may not agree with everything I'm saying, but you know what they're going to say? That fellow sure is passionate about that stuff he's teaching. Well, of course. Well, that's 93% of my message is the accent in my voice, my intensity, ebb and flow, all that. 93% of your message is that tone and how you carry yourself, and your nonverbals all put together. So what's important on that school board meeting and the municipal meeting, anybody in government that's dealing with people particularly are upset, just because they're upset doesn't mean they can't read you, right? Particularly a police officer, we're BS detectors. We are just always looking for body language. And if you're in the public arena like a board member, you're always doing it. So you're picking up on other people's body language. You got to remember something, and they're picking it up on you.
Right.
So if you're sitting there like you don't give a crap, I'm waiting for the next one. You put your hands across your chest, which is the I don't give a crap here. Now, I do the hands across the chest. I'm 6'8" with a 7-foot reach, so my arms come across. That's not what I'm talking about. The self-hug where you rock and you act like, even though you've never said it, I don't give a crap about what you're saying. That's going to derail the meeting as well. If I'm giving passion about what I believe in, whether you agree with it or not, just sit there and be neutral in your facials.
I think that's very important.
And they can look at, since so many of them on video, and let me tell you, I've come home from press conferences, and I thought I did great. And Paula said to me, what were you so pissed off at that press conference about? And then I watched the press conference and I look pissed off after somebody asked me a question. And I look like that's the stupidest question. I have to work on it myself. We all do. It's almost having a stoic or a neutral look, but empathize, see the world through their eyes and trying to pay attention. If you're not careful, and this is a dramatic example, but it's happened in policing where an officer never says a word in the middle of the call. I've had this happen to me. And I was the third officer there and I was called for an extra officer. And it was before we made mandatory arrests on domestics. There was no physical signs of abuse, but I could tell there was a woman that was upset. The kids had poopy diapers, and the gentleman, if you'll call him that, is in the kitchen. He's Mr. Budweiser. He's in charge of the house. You get out of my house. He's doing that. I never said a word. Todd, Scott, I never said a word. I just walked in, and he looked at me. Oh, you want some of me? Come on. I never said a word. Well, what did I think in my mind? I was thinking in my mind, I would have liked to have said, but I didn't. Why don't you step out back with me, smack me up the side of the face and see how it works for you, Mr. Budweiser? I never said that. I was a young cop. I looked at that young woman and I'm saying, and you're calling yourself king of the castle? I was a young officer. And one of the officers says, what's up with you, Dolan? I didn't say anything. Well, what did he pick up on? He picked up on my nonverbals. We have to be aware of those at home and at work. And it's a skill that I had to develop because I'm a little bit like the old man. I got that Irish temper, so I had a pocket.
Well, we've talked about the joint training we're having on October 19th. So we'll have you here in South Carolina on October the 19th. And this is really the first joint training between the School Boards Association and the Municipal Association. So we're exciting. We'll say first of many, because this is not going to be a one and done. This is going to be something that we are together on for the long haul.
And Todd, I would like to say I'm excited to see how school board members and city council members are going to interact and how they're going to react with each other. Because I think that it's almost kind of like a safety in numbers, so to speak. And they've been in the same foxholes with each other. And so I'm really excited about this joint training and having the two organizations. This is historic. We've yeah. worked together on legislative stuff before. Mm-hmm. We've worked against each other on legislative stuff before. But this is different. This is focusing on our memberships, and they're cut from the same cloth. They come from the same communities. They have the same passions, the same concerns. And I'm just really looking forward. I'm hoping they'll ride together when they come Absolutely. To Columbia. You know, get a big van and ride together. I would love to see that happen. And I'm just really looking forward to mixing the two together and learning about each other and sharing with one another and hearing from Chief Dolan about how, you know, how we can really have unity of command, as he said, and work towards having meetings that are more productive and that are meetings that we are proud to have kids there and parents and grandparents and the clergy and all of that.
So Chief, what can our attendees at the training on the 19th, what can they expect from those? I think it's a 5 or 6 hour training. It's pretty in depth. So what can they expect to take from that?
I want them to come in, and that's why this is such a great opportunity that we have a time to talk about the agenda. I want them to come in thinking of the life skill. I want them to think, just like you both organizations said, it's time to really look at civility, you know, and it's about respect for one another and not responding to words, right? Not reacting to words, but look at the meaning of why someone's saying that. And we're going to talk about specific deflection techniques. Then we're going to go into persuasion and trying to get someone to understand. Right. You can't reason with someone who we call TUI, they're talking under the influence. Stop trying to reason with them. It doesn't work. Start thinking about, can I persuade them of what's occurring? You know, it's very hard to do. They think they're right. Sometimes they're locked in their perspective. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to, as we started the conversation, we're going to look at Aristotle. And everybody remembers from school that ethos, logos, and pathos. But I'm sure they're like me. I didn't pay attention, but now I get it. It took me a while. What is ethos? What is it anyway? It's making your audience. Aristotle was right. Audiences aren't found, they're made. That's why the rules of engagement are so important. So you're making your audience. Don't wait to hear from. Here's what we're going to be doing. Do you look and do you act the part? And do you? And really, when you look at ethos, it's just legitimacy. What does that boil down to? Not me. Am I being perceived by the audience as, and just like on this podcast, do people think I'm treating them fair? Do they think I'm treating them with respect? And are they gaining some trust in my knowledge because we went a little bit into my credo and my credibility? You put all that together, call it ethos, legitimacy. In order to persuade someone, you have to have your ethical appeal. I never figured it out till later in life. He's right. Look and act the part. Don't wear your pajamas to work, right? Work and act and have your nonverbals. And I tell officers that.
Can I quote you on that with my staff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people don't realize that. They have no idea how, you know, people don't know it, but I got a suit and tie on. I didn't know if we were going to do video or not. I do all that. People say, yeah, if it's a webinar, you're just teaching. Why? Because it's half my battle and it doesn't cost that much. I'm not just being old school here. What I ask people all the time is, you believe in ethos? No, I don't. I want to wear my pajamas. I want baggy pants with a lot of pockets. I want this. I want that. I get that. But you believe in ethos. What do you mean? What'd you wear to your interview? What do you mean, Chief? What did you wear to your interview? Oh, you wore your best business attire. And you? Oh, you wore a suit. Oh, we don't need that. We needed to know about the authentic you. What's your favorite sports team? You know, just tell them. Oh, no. Why did you? Oh, you wanted the job. You thought how you looked and how you carried yourself and how you presented yourself would be a determining factor on if whether or not we put you further in the process. Well, yes, my parents said. Well, they believed in Aristotle, too. Why? So I just have to ask you a question. What changed now that we hired you? It's 2 o'clock in the morning and you might have to tell someone some very bad news. You should look your part, act upon it. You're on the school board. You know, you're a mayor or somebody. I just tell them, look the part. I get it. Everybody wants to dress down Friday, come as you are Wednesday, hope you show up Tuesday. I get all that. But I just think it's a hard hill to climb, and it's a piece of cake. I can go to airports and everything. If I teach and I always wear a suit, I can get upgraded. I can get so many things in life. I get the biggest kick out of that, that people don't pay attention. They let me walk through buildings. I got no business letting me walk in. Well, look, he's got a suit on. Well, that's all ethos is. It's credibility, and it's what being perceived by your audience. Everybody, as if you're the chair, does everyone perceive you as legitimate? Do they think you're treating them fair with respect? And are we developing trust? If a police department does that in a community, we call that legitimacy and city services, et cetera. Okay, now that we got that, now that you got your ethos going, what should you do? You need to give me a logical reason for your argument. That's logos. So we'll go to the meeting where the man said, I've got a power of attorney. I'm going to talk for 15 minutes. I hear that, sir. The mayor set up his credo with his ethos. And what does he do then? I understand what you're saying. He's going to deflect the verbal abuse because the guy's trying to hit his hot button, which is to rope-a-dope him. Oh, I understand. Then I can see where you might think that might be the case because you had an attorney and they waived it. But see, let me give you the logical reason. See, the rule is meant for one person at a time. They don't consolidate. Okay. If they wanted to come up and repeat the same thing, we're good with that. See, this is logical. This is why we have this rule. So I'm going to go with your logic all day. That's all it is. I'm giving you a logical reason. See, if I'm making my audience, everybody else is saying, well, that makes sense, right? Yep. Well, no, I have talked to a lawyer. I hear that, right? I'm going to paraphrase back. I'm going to deflect. I see that. I can see all the deflection is I hear what you're saying. I got that. I can see why you might think that. However, we're not doing that. That's all that is. My mother-in-law was the best at it. When I would bring the kids home when they were young, and she was a retired librarian, and we bring the kids home and they're out there and seeing Mimi, and she would say, how are you, Harry? I said, oh, not so good. I don't know if I broke my rib or bruised it. Huh? Oh, is that right? That must be very painful. I have carrot cake for my kids. And what did she just do? She said, I'm really not worried about it, Harry, but we're going to get my kids some carrot cake here, my grandbabies. But what did she do? She just deflected it. You can do it in the right way. I see that. And that's what that mayor did. And I can see why you got with a lawyer. You think you can do that. But that's not what the rule was meant for. Okay, we're good. All right, no, I'm not doing it. Well, there's only one thing left. There's only three steps. What's your pathos? Which is what? What's the emotional appeal? You have my ethical appeal. You look and act upon. Aristotle said he didn't invent it. He just revealed the three means of persuasion. He said people that do this really are successful, not 100% of the time, but it works. You learn this on your own because it's a human universal. So this is what we do. He just said the people that are the great orators of his day, including him and others, and great writers make their audience, give you the logical reason, but then they tell you if they need to persuade you why it's in your best interest. And here's how they do it. Now, sir, I hear what you're saying. I gave you the logical reason. Now, sir, here's what we can do. Your time is up and someone else can come up and we're good. All right. And then I'm going to just have to ask you to step down so we can have other people come up and we're going to go ahead and cover the agenda. And I'd like you to step. I'm not stepping down. I've got it. I hear that. All right, sir. The only other option we have is that you're going to put yourself in a position to be charged with trespassing. We don't like to do that. Well, I'm staying right here. I got a lawyer. I understand that. And we've already explained the logic to you. So I want to make sure I'm clear here, sir. Rather than abide by our rules that we've made very clear and let other people speak, and then you can come back another day and speak, but you'd rather put yourself in a position to be arrested for trespass and perhaps being asked not to come back. We don't want that. I'm telling you, I'm not leaving. All right. I want to make sure I'm clear here. You'd rather be escorted out than comply with my lawful, reasonable request here. Is that what you're saying, sir? Just want to make sure you're clear here. Well, I want to treat you with the most respect. And then I got to make a decision. Remember back to the rules of engagement? Do we want to do that? All right, get with the police and all security. Do we want to do that? Or are we going to say, maybe we say we're going to have a recess. Sir, we're going to recess, sir. And maybe you can meet with your friends and all. But we're going to take a – and do you know what happens? If you make your audience real well, you know this, Scott and Todd. It's when you've done something, you make your audience well. Here's what happens. Because the speaker – in that case, Todd, he wanted to make the audience. He tried to take the audience and the mayor deflected, said, no, we're going to do three steps here and you're going to make a decision whether or not you want to go out on your own or whatever. But what happens if you decide to recess? Well, I guess, well, then maybe we've got a couple options. I guess we could ask the officers to apprehend you, but I don't know if we want to do that. So why don't we let you go back and meet with your friends here and maybe get your attorney involved. We're going to get a cup of coffee and we'll come back and get back on the agenda. I've heard people say, all right, Elliot, sit down. I don't want to be here all night. Why? You just made your audience. Then you've got people turning on that person, not turning on them, but saying, you lost.
Right.
You remember the phrase, you know, never argue. It's Mark Twain. Never argue with a fool. Onlookers won't be able to tell the difference. You lost. Why? Because I kept my credibility. You tried to take it. It didn't work. I saw that strategy that you have some lawyer wrote a form. That's great. But it didn't work. I'm staying to what I did, but I did it logically. I have the unity, not the agreement, but the unity in the board. We're going to go all get a cup of coffee. Right. I've been in the middle of living rooms where I've had people, and I've done it just like that. Three basic steps where somebody in the house says, Charles, do what Officer Dolan told you. That's their own kid they're turning on, or their husband or their wife. Not because they like me more, my argument was stronger. And that's, and a lot of times in meetings like that, I don't want to sit here all night. The TV cameras don't want to be here all night. We're just going to take another break and let's everybody do that. And I don't think we take enough breaks. I really don't. And it's just like we get stuck on groupthink, or we got to do this. All right, let's think this through. And it's, people don't want to stay all night to those types of meetings, but it gives them options. And that's what I want them to think, back to your point, Scott, is that what I'm going to teach them and give them some skills that I've learned and others have learned, just to be more persuasive, right? Yeah. Seeing the world through other people's eyes and look, and really establishing the credibility that you all have. Deflect the verbal abuse, right? And remember this too about protesters. And I want everybody to know this. Somebody who protests, and I'm someone who's trained around the world a bit, and I've been to Russia back in 07, and I've been to Budapest, and I've been to Israel, and I always like to visit other countries when I can. And I always find it so fascinating being an American. You know, people get a kick out of us the way we protest. Well, why? Because we trust the government officials. What do you mean? We trust the school board. What do you mean you trust school? You feel very comfortable coming into a school board meeting saying, if this happens and we talk about this, we're sitting down, we're going to have a sit in. And all right, now why do they do that? And what if they chain themselves to the podium? Let's say they come through, and we've seen cases like that, and then someone swallows the key, right? And they change themselves to the podium or outside the school board or the city hall.
Anybody any ideas, Chief.
Well, I've lived through it, and we got people like that changed, you know. But we follow OSHA regulations. We put ear muffins on them, and we cover up their faces. Why? Because they trust us. I want you to think of it that way. Use empathy, not sympathy. Use empathy through the eyes of a protester. I know the police will take care of me. Yes, we have individual incidents, no doubt. Every business does. But basically, overall, we trust the government to take care of us, not to hurt us, not to abuse us. So we're going to protest. We're going to say stupid stuff. We're going to tire. And we're even going to eat the key. Well, what if we leave you there for a few days? You're going to wish you didn't eat that key. Well, some countries do that. You don't eat the key and chain yourself to things in other countries and don't act the way we do in this country, because we're in America. We're Americans, and we're proud of what we do. School boards know that. Municipal groups know that. And we have to think that way. But so it helps me manage it when people are upset. We have such a great country and such a great process that people come and do that. That's not everywhere. Yeah. So let us try to manage that and actually use that in our pathos, the higher calling, right? So if I'm a school board member, we believe in what you're doing and expressing it. We just have to manage the time, place, and matter.
Wonderful point. Wonderful point.
Right, absolutely. And so this is just a taste of what we're going to have on the 19th. This is going to be a great day. Not only just for the training, but for the historical nature of our meeting, as Scott mentioned. And so, I want to thank Scott and Chief Dolan for being on the podcast today. And, you know, I think Scott, y'all are going to send out information to the school boards for registration, and we're going to send out the information to the municipalities. Yep. Just because we have the information and y'all have the information on your folks, but that's where the separation ends. We're going to come together on the 19th and sit at tables amongst one another, and hopefully, like you said, ride together to the meeting. And looking forward to hearing what else Chief Dolan has to say. So again, thank you for both joining us today. I think this was a great podcast, and I know we'll get a lot of listeners ahead of the 19th, but certainly looking forward to it.
Well, Todd and Scott, thank you for having me. And my last comment would be thank you for your associations coming together. And we're starting to see more of this around the country. You're on the cutting edge. You're taking the lead, saying whether it's the national agenda, you're very apolitical. What we're seeing, this isn't good for young people to see. We've got to be the leaders to step up and do what? Enhance our skills. So my close would be, let's add some tools to our toolkit. You know, let's not people rope a dope us. Let's, because we don't feel good after the meeting if we were saying things we really didn't mean. Let's do it right. Let's make sure we got the rules of engagement, and let's get some skill sets.
Chief, looking forward to it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, gentlemen.
Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcast on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our association's website, www.masc.sc.